So yeah, there is another opportunity for the audience to ask questions. We have in essence three pathways for questions. You can send your question through your app, and they will be collected backstage and brought over. Then you can use the cards on your table, and then this very traditional way in standing up, just going to the mic and asking questions. So I've already a set of questions here, and maybe I give it to you, Shira, and there is another for you set here, and for you, if maybe you want to read the question and then try to answer it. Do you want to start?
Yes. Hi, it works. The first question, what happened to the reflection coefficient when the aortic graph is present like a stent graph, or where there is bypass from the aorta to iliac artery? What is the effect on diastolic blood pressure and perfusion? This is a perfect question. One problem the surgeon are facing is just to try to adapt the graft they are using, especially for the aortic grafting, with physical property as much as close as possible to a normal aorta and respecting the dimension. What happens in patient when it's not totally respected, for example, with grafts or with these prosthesis with the rupture of aortic aneurysm? You have a complete dissociation between normal taper and the stiffness gradient when it's not respected, and it's very difficult to respect, but they know now. One consequence is very high systolic blood pressure, central and peripheral, with all complications associated with this abnormal pressure, which is very tightly related to this abnormality. Left ventricular hypertrophy, diastolic dysfunction of the left ventricle, and of course frequently propagation of the very high pressure to the brain. So one condition for these aortic surgeons is to respect as much as possible the relationship between the normal tape according to age of the aorta and the stiffness gradient. They know it now, because now it's become more and more common in their daily practice. But of course it must be a very, very good surgeon.
Okay, thank you. Ali, maybe you want to move on to
sure,
a question?
I had a series of questions. I think one of them was about what are the indications for testing for patients, and who covers the cost? So the indications for testing are a work in progress. As I mentioned, we're doing these studies so that to be able to convince ourselves that genetic testing has value. So I do think I'm convinced that microarray actually is very valuable in children with congenital kidney defects. The problem we're still facing is that we have to convince the insurance companies. It's really ridiculous when we order a genetic test, and we're looking for the exact same disorders that the pediatric psychiatrist and neurologist are looking for, yet this gets denied by the insurance company. And so that requires, formal, letters that we write, which cites the literature and justifies it, and that usually gets through. So I think particularly in children who have congenital defects, there are very good panels now that are available. But I think exome sequencing increasingly, when you look across the genome, makes a lot more sense, because clinically we tend to misclassify a lot of patients. And so if you look, and knowledge accumulates, new genes are added all the time. So in children in particular, adults with strong family history, congenital defects, it makes a lot of sense to order these tests. And if you justify in your letter the cited literature, then you can usually get past the hurdle. And with the cost of sequencing dropping, I think that will become feasible and more practical in years to come.
Okay.
Do we see a reduction in venous oxygen concentration relative to arterial in dialysis patient as a result of increased aortic stiffness? The answer will be yes, but why? This morning we have heard a lot about intradialytic hypotension and the consequences. Intradialytic hypotension is in great part related to the stiffening of the arterial system, because if you ultrafiltrate a little bit too much these patients, the sensitivity of all the system to changes in volume is very high. If you increase volume, we've developed very high systolic pressure, but you exaggerate a little bit ultrafiltration, decreasing, of course, the volume, you get a sharp decrease in diastolic pressure. And high stiffness is very frequently one of the principal reasons in all patients for the intra-aortic hypotension. The second problem is that the stiffening of the central arteries is associated with a very poor baroreflex system signaling. It means that, for example, if the one of the reaction to the hypotension is the mechanoreceptor sensitivity of carotid sinus, an increase in tachycardia, an increase in related catecholamine. In the stiffness, we know that this baroreflex doesn't work. So this is a condition, one of the best condition or the primary condition for hypotension, hypotension in patient in elderly patient, especially with high stiffness in hemodialysis patient, but even in the elderly patient. So you heard this morning that it has a tremendous effect, of course, on changes in cardiac output, in the peripheral vasoconstriction when it occurs. So it's absolutely certain that it's stiffness, and not only this way, but even in the normal basic condition, due to the accelerated transit time of the blood in the capillary and exchange with oxygen, which is already a reason why you have a decreased oxygenation, even in the baseline condition.
Yeah. May I just follow up on this? I'm wondering when the transit, when the pressure on the arterial side of the capillary is high, this would also, I mean, the Starling hypothesis promote fluid extravasation into the interstitium. Is there actually a relationship between pulse velocity and extracellular or interstitial fluid accumulation?
Well, you have to take it in a global system, not only, it's a problem of the stiffness gradient, the changes in the stiffness, etc. When you have a high perfusion pressure, well, high impact, of course, in normal condition, it could be regulated by autoregulation locally. But myogenic autoregulation is always not sufficient enough in some organ, especially in the presence of chronic kidney disease in elderly patients or in advanced hypertension. So one of the defense is the structural changes, what we call the inward remodeling of microcirculation with a small diameter, with an increase in wall-to-thickness ratio, like it's observed in the peripheral microcirculation in the brain. So in this condition, you have these permanent changes. It's not autoregulation with myogenic. It's because it's a chronic system, chronic impact of this high microcirculatory pressure transmission, which leads to the structural changes in this case. And of course, this is the first step, for example, of nephroangiosclerosis with high hypertension. So this is absolutely, and of course, you cannot allow this high pressure to penetrate in the capillary because, as you said, extravasation. And this is what happened in the brain with the high prevalence of leukoarthrosis.
Another set of questions were about, again, the role of genetic testing, the pre-transplant workup. I think that's going to be an important area where we're going to be able to implement this sooner than later. I think it will make a lot of sense doing this in the setting of a transplant preparation, given the vast amount of resources that are going to be invested in an individual. And this will help you sort of, again, predict potential complications. So that's one of the areas we're, again, exploring at our institution. The other question was whether will enable more targeted and precision therapy. Of course, one of the issues that we've had compared to our colleagues in oncology is that we haven't had enough molecular targets to go after. And I'm hoping that now that we have good preliminary data, that sequencing will have a good diagnostic yield and will identify a lot of known genetic diseases for patients with kidney disease. This will indicate that there's actually a high predisposition to genetic disease with the kidney in our population, and there are a lot of undiscovered genes that we can now discover by systematically applying this approach. And hopefully then we'll be able to identify new targets that we can then apply for which biotech and pharmaceutical industry will get interested in. And so I think that's one of the reasons why we haven't had as much enthusiasm in our field is that we haven't had credible targets yet.
And for example, for the collagen, as I mentioned, the patient with the collagen mutations, we refer them to a clinical trial, which was a microRNA therapy. And so that was a targeted therapy. So there are some of them out there, but not enough. And I think that in the future, as we apply this, we may become sort of the next discipline in medicine that applies genomics, like oncology, and in fact will, you know, help and generate more enthusiasm in the field and also for trainees who want to who would want to apply to become nephrologists.
Another question here. Okay, I wanted to ask Sharam, I mean, are there straightforward, easy ways for the practicing nephrologists to actually measure pulse with velocity? I'm also thinking about maybe if one would observe the blood pressure drop during dialysis, that clearly is a perturbation of the system related to change, say, in intravascular volume, and applying a mathematical model of the hemodynamics, if this would allow one to actually identify parameters such as aortic stiffness.
Well, fortunately, principally the Japanese develop a very good system for automatic measurement of pulse wave velocity. So it's done automatically, and today you can even have systems which are able to analyze pulse wave velocity changes over 48 hours, for example, in association with dialysis, what happened during dialysis, after dialysis, recuperation. So it exists. So this is not a real problem to measure it. The problem is to really to define which type or which stiffening is really dangerous. When the stiffening is very sensitive to changes in pressure, you can manipulate. You have two possibilities. If it's you can just use antihypertensive drugs to see what happened when the pressure decreases, the blood and stiffness is improved. That's a good. This is purely functional. The problem is that this is true for patients with hypotension. These patients are stiff and do not follow exactly what happened with pressure. So it means that sometimes you have a patient with absolutely dramatic fall in the blood pressure, hypotension, but in this case you have a small decrease in pulse wave velocity but remains still very high, which means that this type, it's not a functional stiffness, it's a structural stiffness. And what we need is to find what to do to prevent these changes in the intrinsic property of the wall. Calcification, okay, when we regress calcification, okay, and that's a problem. So presently we have only one possibility, just to treat this pressure-sensitive patients. And in the other, try to avoid all. But you published a very nice paper with Peter Stenwinkel, how to prevent at least
It's the aging, framework.
You know. So, mTOR inhibitor, metformin, we are trying all these drugs. Metformin maybe is promising in the future. mTOR inhibitors, rapamycin, but cannot be used in this technique. So to find the possibility how to prevent this aging, and I don't know. You know, certainly much better than me.
I don't. Ali, are there any questions?
So I don't think I have. I think I've addressed most of the, in general terms, most of the questions that were asked to me. But I have a question for Gerard, because looking again at this issue of with the questions.
No, go ahead.
This question of vascular stiffness. This clearly age is a major cofactor in increasing stiffness. But there was a lot of overlap. There were a lot of young people who had very high, and then old people who had very low. And so I wonder if one can take advantage of these outliers to be able to look to see if there are, I mean, of course, I'm looking at it from thinking about it genetic, in terms of the genetics, because I think vascular stiffness is, in fact, has a fairly good heritability from other studies. And then the other question was, I guess the other population that may be interesting to study is are African Americans on dialysis, because there's a higher incidence of kidney failure, but there seems to be a survival advantage in this population. Is it because of their vasculature, which is in fact is less vulnerable to some of these? Are there any data on this?
I am not sure that I have seen many data concerning. This is absolutely true that it's genetically, in great part, genetically determined. You have population with aging having absolutely no impact on this stiffness. what is the genetics behind this? You probably will know much better than me. I don't know what it is. Two, it exists. In African Americans, you have a higher prevalence of hypertension, but you are absolutely right that I will take a better example. I know this is the African living in France. We study a lot of, even in dialysis patients, of African origin in France. It is very strange that, for example, studying the incident of vascular calcification and stiffness in these patients, it's lower than in Caucasian Europeans. Why is it so? Are they vegetarian? They don't eat meat? I don't know. This is certainly not true, but the African, I'm not speaking about American, yes. African, have an advantage. They have an advantage.
There is one more question over here, and I hope I didn't miss anyone. The lights are really bright here.
So. I have two quick questions. Maybe it's a very simplistic. A few years back, there was a very interesting study on ESRD dialysis patients, and they look at their pulse wave velocity when they remove fluids, but compared to remove fluids alone, versus remove equivalent amount of fluids, but plus treating with the ACE inhibitor. And the group that with the fluids removal and the ACE inhibitor had an improvement in the pulse wave velocity. I want to hear your interpretation of this.
Was it pressure independent? Because when you remove a lot of fluid, you can decrease pressure and any pressure that, but nevertheless, we know, and that we have there are good data published in the literature that the salt, sodium, etc., is able to induce changes in the intimal, in the structure of the vascular wall, principally in the tie between integrins and vascular smooth muscle, etc. And it is also known, as it was published, I don't have now the publication in my hand, that excess volume, permanent volume excess and overhydration of the tissue is a cofactor of activating interleukins and cytokines, which are participating through inflammation to changes in the stiffness. And it was very nicely shown, I cannot remember now the name of the author, who just exactly what you mentioned, with the analysis of the volume and salt, but even without salt, the volume as such is able by changes the edema, the changes in the wall of the organ to change finally to have a rebuilding of these walls and increasing the stiffness. This is
so
absolutely.
So there would be a degree of a reversibility.
Sorry?
There would be a degree of reversible changes?
Well, to have the reversibility, you have to study a long-term changes, because if you have an effect which is short-lasting, it's sometimes very difficult to differentiate what was related to changes in the pressure associated to volume changes. And so if you have to maintain the state, that is a problem of treatment of stiffness with different drugs. Many times you observe a decrease in stiffness, but which is parallel by decrease in pressure. Then you change it and the pressure rises again, the stiffness came back. So there are only very long time study with a very long treatment with antihypertensive drugs have shown that after several years you have a real regression of stiffness, which is this time not pressure dependent.
Okay, I'd really want to thank both of you for your outstanding talks. I'd like to welcome you back at maybe at 3:45. We are looking forward to talks that are really that will be of great interest, of course. One by Dr. Bargman, Visions in a Crystal Ball, the Future of Peritoneal Dialysis, and the other by Professor David Puszynski about osteoporosis in patients with CKD. So see you in 15 minutes or so.